this week on COVID, Race, and Democracy.
They don't want the public to realize that these biotech labs are unsafe. And remember, in Wuhan, China, the U.S. government was doing experiments there and they were funding experiments.
Former Pfizer molecular biologist Becky McLean on the complete lack of health and safety regulation of the biotech industry.
Either we fight them in Syria or we'll fight them here.
My patriotic colleague, Mr. Zinke of Montana, gave up the game when he said ISIS will never be gone. So presumably the position of those holding that viewpoint is that we have to stay in Syria forever. Maybe make it the 51st state.
The House of Representatives has voted down a resolution to withdraw all U.S. troops from Syria.
In a few years, I find out that that oil that we were cleaning up off of the electrical equipment was radioactive oil. Ohio has the most nuclear facilities than any other state. And yes, our representatives do not take care of its people. They don't make a care less. They want the money.
An electrician talks about her struggle for health and safety at the Piketon, Ohio nuclear processing plant.
DeSantis last month had a press conference about what he's calling the Teacher's Bill of Rights, which is a really funny name for it because it's actually taking away rights from teachers. It's taking away the right to organize.
Public sector unions are under attack in Florida. From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Polina Vasilyev. The U.S. government now says that laboratory leaks may have led to the COVID pandemic. It has not addressed the lack of regulation in U.S. biotech labs that endangers biotech workers and the community. Pfizer molecular biologist Becky McLean, who worked with 6,000 other scientists at the Grattan Pfizer laboratory, discovered dangerous conditions and a dangerous biological leak there. She was fired for speaking out, and she got a disease from the laboratory. She spoke to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
There's now a controversy about the virus leaking from a lab, and there was actually a report in Global Times that there was a release of SARS at the same lab in Wuhan, and the health and safety issues are admitted by the publication in China. You feel that today in American biotech labs, and there are many, most of them, what kind of regulation, and why are you concerned that it's not just a question of what's happening in China, but internationally as far as the protection of these laboratories and workers who work at them?
Well, I think the biotech elite who in the biotech industry in the United States, who are now making $300 billion a year, they have a hold on the messaging of what's safe and what's not safe in the biotech industry. That's a big problem, this conflicts of interest with the government and big money. And so workers don't have the rights to, for health and safety rights to speak out. I was lucky to win my freedom of speech, but if you compare that to other workers speaking out, they're going to have limited rights because, first of all, you lose your career. I went through 6 years of a lawsuit without a career. I lost my career. And what whistleblower is going to lose their career and go through 6 years of legal battles to win? So there's many changes that need to go on. The other issue is that, the biotech industry does not want any acknowledgement really that there's unsafe laboratory practices happening in the United States or really anywhere. That's why most of the scientific elite are saying that this was a natural occurrence instead of a lab release that caused the COVID-19. But there's a lot of evidence that the COVID-19 was released from, potentially and most likely released from the Wuhan virology lab in China. So there's a problem really with allowing information to the public, to good information and true information.
And you were living in Connecticut, where Pfizer is located, and it turns out that Lyme, Connecticut, is where there was the first discovery of the Lyme disease. It was close to Plum Island, where there was a biological laboratory. They brought in Nazi scientists to this laboratory in Plum Island. And there's a book, Lab 257, about the possibility that the Lyme disease actually was a genetically engineered disease. And I was surprised by that. Most people don't know about that. But the whole biotech industry, how is it, I mean, that the biotech industry has been able to cover up the serious health and safety problems in biotech labs in the United States?
Well, one of the problems is the whistleblower laws are so weak that, again, as I said, there's not that many whistleblowers that are able to stand up. There's not enough protections for a fast or efficient solution. The conflicts of interest within the private industry, there's many gag orders that biotech workers have to sign. Even if it's a public concern or a public health concern, they can't speak about it. And the lack of health and safety rights for workers. When I was working there, our lab safety committee was silenced and people were afraid to lose their jobs. So if you don't have workers able to speak out about unsafe lab conditions, do you think a company's going to speak out about them? I doubt very much. So we really need major changes regarding protections and free speech rights for workers in this country.
And as a result of the leak at your laboratory at Pfizer, you got a disease, genetic disease, and even the judge in your case, a federal judge, told you you couldn't tell the jury that you had a disease as a result of improper health and safety conditions at that laboratory. Did you find that shocking?
Right. It was amazing, the trial of what I could not talk about. I could not talk about the genetically engineered exposures that I had incurred, and they were due from unsafe lab practices. And anytime we tried to bring up the issues about viruses made in a BL2 lab that can infect humans, we couldn't speak about it. So even though you can go to trial, you still can't speak about it. So it's just incredible. Until I think someone really understands my story, they're not going to understand the issues that are upon biotech workers and why we're not getting any information and why it's so secret in the biotech labs.
And of course, the biotech industry, the drug pushers, spend tremendous amounts of money on lobbying and also television and radio, the ads for drugs of these companies, massive control of the media industry. So if you have a story about the fact that they're responsible for leaks and responsible for having dangerous conditions in a biotech lab, it may affect their advertisers. So they obviously have a lot of control of the media.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And just what was it? Just yesterday at the congressional hearings, I believe the CDC director told the Congress that he was basically told by Anthony Fauci that he couldn't disclose that he believed that the virus from the Wuhan that came from the Wuhan, China. Because they don't want the public to realize that these biotech labs are unsafe. And remember, in Wuhan, China, the U.S. government was doing experiments there and they were funding experiments. So this is an international lab. It's not just China doing this dangerous research. It's all around the country that does this dangerous research.
One of the issues that has come up is the CDC. These government agencies are actually, they accept studies financed by Pfizer and other companies about the vaccines that they're producing. So how do you have confidence that they're going to be objective about what they're doing, actually?
That's right. I mean, no peer review. It's, if we're going to talk about the COVID-19 vaccine, there was really no peer review. All the initial studies came out from Pfizer, the biotech company that was making the vaccines. So there's, you know, a big money-making factor. What I found out that Pfizer made $100 billion in 1 year, and $56 billion of that was due to vaccine revenue or their drug revenue from trying to treat COVID. So which is amazing to me. A mandated vaccine and a company makes so much money from a mandated vaccine. Wouldn't you think that if everybody has to take the vaccine, then why would a company make so much money?
The whole research, a lot of research was funded by the United States government. And yet this company is making billions and billions from this. And also they see it as a revenue stream. The more vaccines, the more profits. Do you think that that is a problem, that these drug companies actually want a continuous revenue stream for more and more vaccines?
Well, of course. I mean, it's all about money, right? That's the problem now about science. It has become so private, and our academic communities have been tied with private industry and making money, that it's all about money. It's not about public health. It's about making money, at least prioritize about making money compared to public health.
And you, as a whistleblower, you wanted to get protection because you were being retaliated against for saying that there was a biological leak in the biological cabinet there that was threatening you and other people. And you went to OSHA. What happened at OSHA?
Well, I think my story really resounds that we really do not have effective oversight, and that our agencies that are supposed to have oversight are captured by these private industries that are making big money. I had concrete evidence that our safety committee was silenced, and it wasn't just me, it was other people. And I had evidence also that there were unsafe lab practices going on. And I requested time after time again for a laboratory inspection. And through all that, I didn't even get an inspection. That's not oversight. And in fact, OSHA wanted to silence me. They didn't want this coming out again because they're trying to protect the industry and the scientific elite that want to promise miracle cures for all these advanced, dangerous technologies. And without saying at the same time they're completely safe. Well, I knew after what happened to me that I knew there was no oversight, that scientists don't have free speech rights, that scientists really don't have effective health and safety rights, that and no oversight, there would be an epidemic or a pandemic. I knew it was coming.
And you went to OSHA, and also they took your documents and OSHA official and gave it to Pfizer. And then you met with David Michaels, who was the head of OSHA, and he didn't do any investigation. He didn't really find out what had happened. It seems like the corruption of OSHA at the top even is pretty problematic. I mean, now we see this rail wrecks and lack of health and safety. It seems like it's not just an OSHA thing. It's a system problem with the capture of these agencies, which are supposed to do all oversight for protection of the health safety of workers.
That's right. That's absolutely right. It's a dangerous situation. It really is a dangerous situation. And this whole issue about trying to silence the potential that a lab leak caused the pandemic is just another example of how they're trying to quelch any that these biotech companies are and labs are not dangerous. Well, they're very dangerous. Even BL2, I was working in a BL2 lab. They're making infectious agents that can infect humans. So not as dangerous as the BL4, but in the Wuhan, the Wuhan lab in China, but still very dangerous, where they can cause new emerging disease, chronic illness in people, and even epidemic or pandemic if the situation were right. So we need some solutions. And I just wish the scientific elite would be honest to the American people. It would be quite helpful. And so I'm really glad that these congressional hearings are happening to try to figure out why people are being silenced about these issues.
The issue of health and safety protection, you say that scientists and workers in biotech industry are afraid. There are no real regulations. And even when there are leaks, you had a problem getting OSHA to even investigate the lab, even though there was a leak at the Pfizer lab. And for workers at other labs, biotech labs, I guess they have the same problem, that their OSHA is not there. There are less than 2,000 OSHA inspectors in the United States. And when, one of the things you learned was that they don't even have trained personnel, OSHA, to investigate what's going on at these labs. How could that be with the kind of big industry that the big pharma is, these tech industries, biotech industries?
Yeah,
I guess it's self-regulation. Let them regulate themselves.
That's exactly how it is. That's exactly how it is. And if you're self-regulating yourself, I mean, think about it. If you have to get home and you're driving on a highway and the speed limit's 50 and you've got have to get home fast, are you going to self-regulate and go 50 miles an hour? No, that's the same with the biotech industry. They're self-regulated. They're going to do what they want. And with non-disclosure and trade secrets, you just won't be able to get the information you need regarding public health and safety. So we really need big changes. We need, I think, the best solutions would be to have government oversight and oversight by management at companies or academia. And then I really do believe that we need a whole new system for workers. We need whistleblower laws with increased protections. So it's a fast and efficient solution. Again, workers can't lose their job and their career for their life and no income as they're trying to protect their, trying to raise their children. It just won't happen. You can't have workers gag. There's so many gag orders. And I've talked to workers. I've talked to workers on the street. They've called me crying that they know that there's issues, but they can't talk. And that should be illegal. Gag orders that are a public concern or a public health and safety concern should be completely illegal. And then lastly, you know, biotech workers need health and safety rights. They need, and hopefully to include unions, that they have a power to have safety committees that can't be silenced.
That was former Pfizer molecular biologist Becky McLean speaking with Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me, sister, with brutality. Sister, talk to me, sister, so you can see. Sister, oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Right now. Right now.
That was Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? This is Pacifica's COVID Race and Democracy. I'm Polina Vasiliev. Last week, the House of Representatives voted down a resolution to withdraw all U.S. troops from Syria. Pacifica's Anne Garrison reports.
On February 8th, the House of Representatives debated and voted on House Concurrent Resolution 21 to withdraw all U.S. troops from Syria within 180 days in accordance with the War Powers Act. The act, which was passed in 1973, states that U.S. armed forces cannot be sent to war unless Congress declares war or unless a national emergency is created by attack on the U.S. The resolution's advocates argued that the Authorization for the Use of Military Force, or AUMF, passed 22 years ago after 9/11, does not legally justify ongoing U.S. wars. Its opponents argued that ISIS remains a threat and that the AUMF is still legally valid. No one mentioned the military-industrial motive for continuing the war. Florida Republican Matt Gaetz explained why he had introduced the resolution.
Most Americans don't know a single Syrian. And so people watching this debate might wonder, how has it come to be that Syria has become the great platform of great power competition in the world? Begins in 2011 during the Arab Spring when Assad, who is undeniably a madman and a despot, opens fire on his own people protesting. Then part of the Syrian army defects. They engage in warfare against Assad, and all of a sudden, they got a whole lot of weapons and money being sent from the rich Gulf monarchies through Jordan into Syria. So Iran's not just going to watch this. Assad's their ally. They activate Hezbollah. They then invade Syria. So now you've got Jordan, the Gulf monarchies, Iran. But wait, Russia is pitching their vision of the world as a regime preservation force, whether you're Maduro or Assad. So they get involved. And what do they get for their time? A warm water port in the Eastern Mediterranean. So we've got Russia, the Gulf monarchies. Israel starts to get worried about Hezbollah and Iran. So Israel cuts a deal with Russia to keep Iran out of southern Syria. And if it doesn't get any worse than that, now all of a sudden you've got the Kurds who declare war on Syria. And it makes it a little messy that the Kurds are also in conflict with Turkey, which is a NATO ally. And then somehow the United States in 2015 says, you know what? We need to get involved in this mess in Syria. And since we have been there, we have seen Americans die. We have seen tens of billions of dollars wasted. And what is hilarious about the 2001 AUMF that the neoconservatives wave around like some permission slip for every neoconservative fantasy of turning an Arabian desert into a Jeffersonian democracy is that that very 2001 AUMF would justify attacking the people that we're fighting against and the people we're funding. Because both have ties to Al-Qaeda, and of course the 2001 AUMF dealt with Al-Qaeda. All this talk about a reemergence of ISIS, I would encourage my colleagues to go read the Inspector General's report of the last quarter that indicates that ISIS is not a threat to the homeland, and with the Turks conducting operations in Syria against ISIS, with Assad and Russia having every incentive to create pressure on ISIS, I do not believe that what stands between a caliphate and not a caliphate are the 900 Americans who have been sent to this hellscape with no definition of victory, with no clear objective, and purely existing as a vestige to the regime change, failed foreign policies of multiple former presidents.
Gaetz introduced the 2016 LA Times article headlined, "In Syria, militias armed by the Pentagon fight those armed by the CIA." Montana Democrat Ryan Zinke responded that we have to fight ISIS in Syria or fight them in the streets here.
But there is no doubt that Syria also remains a center for radical Islamic forces and terrorism, like ISIS, like PKK. These are organizations that will never stop, ever. They are committed to destroy this nation and our allies, and we should be aware of their objectives. Lastly, the hard truth is this: either we fight them in Syria or we'll fight them here. Either we fight and defeat them in Syria, or we'll fight in the streets of our nation.
Congressman Gaetz responded to Congressman Zinke.
My patriotic colleague, Mr. Zinke of Montana, gave up the game when he said ISIS will never be gone. So presumably the position of those holding that viewpoint is that we have to stay in Syria forever. Maybe make it the 51st state.
U.S. forces are now in control of the Al Omar oil field, the largest oil field in Syria in terms of area and production capacity. South Carolina Republican Joe Wilson warned that withdrawal would mean surrendering control of it to ISIS.
Upon withdrawal, terrorists would also have unfettered access to the Omar oil field.
Florida Republican Anna Paulina said that troops should be withdrawn because we'll need all the troops we've got for a coming confrontation with China.
What we need to be focusing on is bigger issues like China. Make no mistake, if we take China at their word, a near-peer fight is coming, and it will require 100% of our military.
Texas Republican Michael McCaul, the new chair of the House Foreign Relations Committee, said that the 2001 AUMF still makes the ongoing U.S. troop presence legal because Presidents Obama and Trump said it did, and he agreed with them.
The premise of this whole thing is that there's no authorization for troops to be in Syria today. It's just not accurate. In fact, it's wrong, because in 2014, the ISIS threat was addressed under presidential authorities of 2001 AUMF. And I remember being in the White House with President Trump addressing this crisis as well, about what to do about Syria and whether we believe our U.S. troops should remain in a very small footprint of 900 soldiers in Syria. And at that time, President Trump made the decision that under the 2001 AUMF to keep these troops in country. And I believe that was the correct decision.
Congressman McCaul also said that President Obama had made a disastrous mistake by withdrawing troops from Iraq in 2008 because they'd had to return to fight ISIS a few years later. 2,000 U.S. troops remain in Iraq nearly 20 years after the U.S. attacked. The House ultimately voted the Gates resolution down, 103-321, with 47 Republicans voting yay, 171 nay, while 56 Democrats voted yay, 150 nay. 11 congresspersons did not vote. For Pacifica, I'm Ann Garrison.
Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said, because in general, I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed, because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex, but all they're doing is paying dues to the military-industrial complex. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They turn our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. The military and the monetary use the media as intermediaries. They are determined to keep the citizens secondary. They make so many decisions that are arbitrary. We're marching behind the commander-in-chief, who was standing under a spotlight shaking like a leaf. But the ship of state had landed on an economic reef, so we knew he was going to bring us messages of grief. The military and the monetary were shielded by January and went storming into February. Brought us pot-bellied generals as luminaries. 2 weeks ago, I hadn't heard of some, and all of a sudden, he's legendary. They took the honor from the honorary. They took the dignity from the dignitaries. They took the secrets from the secretary, but they left the an obituary. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. War in the desert sometimes sure is scary, but they beamed out the war to all their subsidiaries. Tried to make so damn insane a worthy adversary, keeping the citizens secondary, scaring old folks into coronaries. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, kept us all wondering if all of this was really truly...
Gil Scott-Heron, Work for Peace. The catastrophic train wreck in East Palestine, Ohio, is not the only toxic nightmare for the people of Ohio and the region. Piketon, Ohio, is home to the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant, one of the largest and most dangerous in uranium enrichment plants in the world. While working there, electrician Vina Cawley discovered that she was being subjected to extraordinarily dangerous levels of radiation. She filed complaints with the Department of Energy, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and the Environmental Protection Agency, and learned that these agencies had all been captured by the contractor running the plant, Centrus Energy Corporation. She has been fighting cancer, along with her surviving co-workers and community, who helped form the National Nuclear Workers for Justice. She spoke to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer.
Actually, I thought I was working where they made Goodyear tar and rubber because I saw some of this sticky stuff. I never really realized it was a nuclear plant. And I thought I was being safe because they would always stress on wearing your hard hats and your safety glasses. I started working in 1980, and by 1983, I filed a grievance because I thought there was more than 30 workers being exposed to some type of radiation. At that time, I really didn't know what, but I just wanted them to investigate it. And that's when my nightmare started, was in 1983 when I filed that grievance. I was working in trichloroethylene, cleaning down uranium-contaminated cells, and I didn't know that these cells were radioactive. The only thing I was concerned about at that time was the oil, because I just thought it was PCB oil. And later, in a few years, I find out that that oil that we were cleaning up off of the electrical equipment was radioactive oil. Piketon is the largest facility in the world. It has two of the largest plants, buildings on site that are the largest in the world. And we were a uranium enrichment facility. So I guess people in Congress and them didn't worry about us too much because we were already being exposed to uranium, we thought. And so they downplayed the health issues at Piketon. Well, I found out that Piketon had been reprocessing reactor fuel since 1955. We did it for West Valley, New York, Savannah River, Hanford, and many other sites. And then in 1992, Piketon had an agreement on megawatts and megatons with the Russians, and we were recycling their nasty stuff. And what happened to the Piketon plant? It got all gummed up with plutonium, neptunium, and americium, all of these radioactive transuranics. None of the workers were ever told that. And in 1999, I broke the story at the same time as the Paducah plant did about plutonium being at the Piketon plant. And because plutonium was at the Piketon plant, we were added into a special cohort where the workers weren't supposed to have to prove what they were exposed to. But that's not been the case. The compensation bill hasn't been easy for workers to have to go through all kind of hoops to get compensated, and a lot of them hasn't got compensated, and a lot of their families haven't been compensated yet.
And we're talking about decades. So you filed a grievance around this, and what was the response of the company?
Well, the DOD came to my house. They kept asking me all kind of questions over and over and over. And I'm thinking, what do I know that I don't know? They were only talking about the PCB oil that was in 85. And I'm thinking, there must be something that I know that I don't know. Because they stayed at my house for like 5 hours and asked me the same questions over and over and over. Well, through my research and through the company documents, I found out that we were reprocessing, the uranium enrichment plant was reprocessing reactor fuel. When I started to work, Goodyear Atomic owned the plant. They're doing open air demolition at the plant. And here we had plutonium that's not been recognized. They recognized it in 99, but now they claim they don't have it. And Marvin Rezikoff came in and he did a study. And we know that there's 360 acres on that plant site that is contaminated with plutonium.
What kind of protection was there from OSHA and the state of Ohio? Because we're now having a crisis in East Palestine, and the governor and the state agencies are supposed to be responsible for protecting the health of the people in Ohio.
you know, I really feel for those people up in Ohio, but I'd like to know why that was so important when they've let this community for the last 70 years be exposed to the air, the water, the chemicals. They had direct pipes that go out to the Scioto River. And I don't know why they're not concerned about Piketon. It just seems like it. The representatives, only thing they worry about is jobs for the community. I'm really concerned. Through my research, I found out, I mean, even our workers, I think, went to Senator Glenn's office in 1980, same time I was getting hired in there, but I didn't know anything about it until later. But they stormed Senator Glenn's office over the health and safety and the radiation at the plant, and they asked for a full investigation. Well, they didn't give them. What they did when the president of the union them come back, they harassed the president of the union and all the other workers that went up there, and there was nothing ever done about the investigation. Now, the president of the union at the time was Denny Bloomfield. He's passed away. I have a video here of the workers that was involved in that, and Sam Ray passed away, Denny passed away, Jerry Slichter passed away, and there's other ones in there. I don't quite remember all the names, but they've all passed away. I have this video was done in 1985, and all of these workers have mostly died of cancer. Piketon is not a high-level waste facility. We are only supposed to have low-level waste. What happened was Piketon was double the Superfund list. We never was put on it because they had a consent agreement with the state of Ohio, so they never put Piketon on the radar as one of the worst facilities in the world. So that's one way they've been able to get by with contaminating everybody and not have to be accountable. They're not accountable. We've asked for them to do investigations of the site, and I'm getting ready to write our representatives, because they know plutonium is at Piketon. They knew it since 99, but the DOE tried to tell them that we got maybe one cylinder that was diluted and they ran it through the system, but that's not the truth. In X705, the guys had an experimental job with plutonium, and it contaminated these workers so bad, they had to take them down to Oak Ridge for weeks at a time to try to get their body counts down.
And it sounds like the people of Ohio that are really not being protected by either the companies or the government agencies, which are supposed to protect people. There are other toxic dump sites in Ohio that are you familiar with? Are there any other sites where they're similar, not as bad, but similar problems?
Yeah, Trinald and Mound, but they do clean up there like they're doing Piketon. It's another Department of Energy site. But Fernald's in Hamilton County, Mound is in Dayton, Ohio, and then Piketon is, the Portsmouth plant is in Piketon, Ohio. And then there's the Bessie plant up around Cleveland somewhere. And there's just so many, Ohio has the most nuclear facilities than any other state. And yes, our representatives do not take care of its people. They could care less. They want the money, the benefits.
That was Vina Colley, an electrician with the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers International Union, speaking about the struggle for health and safety at the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Uranium Enrichment Plant in Piketon, Ohio.
Thank you.
Eurythmics. With Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart, I saved the world today. You're listening to Pacifica's COVID Race and Democracy. I'm your host, Paulina Vasilyev. Activists are calling out Florida Governor Ron DeSantis for attacking public education, trans rights, and now public sector unions. Ruth Beltran, host of The Ruthless Truth on Pacifica affiliate WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, spoke to community activist and teacher Carla Correa.
In the last few weeks or the past couple of months, let's say, we continue to hear this conversation and these lines about the dictatorship of Governor Ron DeSantis, right? And we ask ourselves, what does that really mean? What do activists mean when they say the dictatorship of Governor Ron DeSantis? So to dig into this topic, today I have with me community organizer and substitute teacher and now union employee, Carla Correa. So thank you for being here with me, Carla.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. This is such an important topic because the attacks continue to intensify every single day. It's like, once you think you've seen the craziest headline about DeSantis, the next day he's doing something 10 times crazier. Like with the AP, banning the AP African American Studies, it's like, damn, that's crazy. And then like, next thing you know, it's like, actually banning all AP classes.
Exactly. And we got to ask ourselves, why does the governor have the power to do that? Why the voice of the people or the option of students to take AP classes, why doesn't that matter?
It really just shows that we don't live in a democratic society at all. So when we talk about DeSantis's dictatorship, we kind of mean that literally, because so many things DeSantis has done have been considered illegal under our current system. They've been considered unconstitutional more than a few times. But every time he's gotten away with it and he's still in power, he's still the governor. No matter how many illegal things he does, it seems like it does not matter. And I think a really obvious example of that is when he removed twice democratically elected state attorney Andrew Warren in Hillsborough County. You know, it was pretty clear. And the judge even said that that was illegal because let me go back. The reason why he said that he wanted to remove him, the reason why he removed him is because Andrew Warren said that he wouldn't prosecute abortion cases, that he wasn't going to criminalize abortion. And so DeSantis removes him, it goes to court, and then the court says, yeah, that was illegal because prosecutors have prosecutorial discretion in cases, and they can choose whether or not they want to prosecute cases. And so they agreed that it was illegal, but yet they said that they couldn't reinstate him. And it seems like that's the case with a lot of things DeSantis does, that they're considered illegal, like unconstitutional, which is, you know, supposed to be really serious. They say we're supposed to have checks and balances, but there's no checks and balances for DeSantis.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm noticing. And right now he's even destroying education. We can take the example of what's happening in New College, for example. Why does the governor have the power? And this is what we need to ask ourselves. Why does the governor have the power to literally fly in people from other states to take power over New College and decide what New College will be, you know, without the vote or the voice of the people? The students that sign up to go to New College, they sign up for a particular reason, you know, for a particular curriculum that they want to follow. It's a liberal arts school that's very open to LGBTQ community and to, you know, neurodivergent students. But DeSantis has decided to basically change the school to be a Christian conservative school, and he's able to get away with that. And again, we have to ask ourselves, where are our democratic rights? What's happening with that? Do we even have any rights, or do we seriously live under the dictatorship of Governor Ron DeSantis and at his will to do anything and everything that he wants to do? What are your thoughts about that, Carla, particularly when it comes to education? You know, the new civics curriculum that he has put in place for 7 to 12 graders, you know, the cancellation of all AP courses throughout the state of Florida. Like, what should we do now? And why is it that, I mean, are we really living in a democracy at this point?
this, what you're talking about, you know, him flying people into the new college board and, you know, what people actually want at new college, it not mattering at all. That reminds me of what he did with trans healthcare, trans youth healthcare. So, you know, he appointed all of those members of the Florida Board of Medicine relatively quickly and flew in people to say that they detransitioned and that, you know, being trans isn't a real thing, basically, even though the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of people who came out to those hearings were either trans themselves or allies and, you know, opposing this ban on trans healthcare for children. So, you know, it's like under this system, the fact that the something is the will of the people, it just shows how easily they can override the will of the people for their agenda.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And that makes me think that what are we going to do as the people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we going to let it be?
No.
And just accept the new reality, you know, that our communities, exactly. Our schools, our healthcare system is going to be exactly what DeSantis want? Or are we going to stand up as people that live in the state of Florida, that live right here in the Minnesota area? Are we going to stand up and take a stand and defend our democratic rights, right? I think that is the call of the moment right now. You know, let me go back a little bit before I even get to that. Tell me a little bit about the attacks on unions, like teachers' unions. It's not only the pay for educators. It's not only what they can even teach about. It's not only what you know, a restriction on what children can read, regardless of what their parents want these children to read. It's just so much trumping on, you know, on what I see as democratic rights. And, you know, us as people, how come we don't count right now, you know? So tell me a little bit about the attacks on unions, because this is something very important that we need to keep in mind. And we're going to have to take a stand and defend and protect our educators and our students.
Yes. So DeSantis last month had a press conference about what he's calling the Teachers' Bill of Rights, which is a really funny name for it because it's actually taking away rights from teachers. It's taking away the right to organize. So it's essentially, its aim is to dismantle not only teachers' unions, but from what it looks like, public sector unions, because it's entitled the Teachers' Bill of Rights. And a lot of the stipulations of what he said, they talk specifically about what they call school unions. But then the first point on this, on the Teachers' Bill of Rights, is that it says public sector unions have to have 60% union density. And for teachers, most teachers' unions around the state don't have 60% right now. Where I live in Pinellas, it's 52% for the teachers' union and then 30% for the support staff union. But again, it says, you know, unions representing public employees and the language in the Teachers' Bill of Rights. So it's part of a larger attack on the public sector, which is, you know, what we've been saying. The public sector has been starved of resources for housing, for healthcare, everything. And education is kind of the last front on that battle.
Yes. And I'm just thinking, what are we going to do as a society? You know, we have teachers that are leaving the area because they can no longer afford to live here. You know, many teachers already cannot afford to live in the districts where they teach. And what are we going to do at this point? How, you know, we as a community, I feel, need to come out and take a strong stand to protect our educators, you know, and to protect the unions. I think you failed to mention the union dues deduction, you know?
Yes, yes.
Governor Ron DeSantis did a press conference where he's literally providing wrong information, you know, just deceiving his listeners, right? With statements such as, you know, we want unions to tell the workers how much they are going to deduct patient.
Yeah.
They already do that. It's very well established.
And he knows that. So, you know, those things, they're not really threats. The things that are the main threats are, the automatic, the cancellation of automatic deduction, because
from dues, because that's how unions are, that's how unions function mm-hmm. from dues.
Yes.
So, you know, cutting off the way mm-hmm. to the easiest way to pay dues, that's just, they're trying to kill the union. And it's, you know, yeah. it's pretty obvious.
Yes. And that's exactly what that is, a union busting mm-hmm. Thing. I'm just really hoping that through these conversations, our listeners can understand that we are living under the dictatorship of Governor Ron DeSantis, and that if this is not what we want, we are going to have to take a very strong stand and come out and protect public education. I mean, public education yes. is the foundation of our democracy. This is how we are going to raise the next generation
yeah, absolutely.
That is going to take over. Mm-hmm. You know, and if we are just dumbing down the education, if we are, you know, taking away real American history, because that is what Black history is, it's real American history. We are taking away, you know, the rights of students to learn Black history. Because keep in mind, some parents and some students may not want to learn that. But there's another, you know, greater amount of parents and students that do want their kids to be taught like real American history with all of it, without whitewashing it and taking away, you know, our history regarding slavery, our history regarding the colonization of, you know, Native Americans that lived here. Like, this is part of our actual history, and we should refuse at all costs to stand by this. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to come out
yeah, exactly.
and be very aggressive about it.
Exactly. And that those people you're talking about who, you know, so-called don't want their kids to learn Black history, that is not the majority. That is a very small minority who is being fueled by, you know, billionaire and millionaire dollars on the mainstream media to put this propaganda out about trans people, about Black history, you know, what they're calling critical race theory. You know, there's a concerted effort to spread those ideas. So that's why it's so important that, you know, we organize. I know you were asking, like, what can we do? Mm-hmm. We can organize. So what that means is, you know, parents coming together, students coming together, educators coming together, like, teachers, join your union. Join your union if you're not in your union already. And if you are in it already, get involved, be active. Mm-hmm. And same, you know, support staff professionals in schools, get involved in your union, join your union, make sure your union doesn't fall apart. You know, students, a good example was the students at PHU, Palm Harbor University, whose their school, and then of course Pinellas County, banned The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, but they've been fighting back. They've been organizing, they've been having protests at school, they've been going out to the school board meeting, and then concerned parents who have the same goals as we do, who again is most parents, you know, need to organize, whether that's in the PTA or other mass organizations. We all need to come together. We need unity, because that is the purpose of all of these lies that we hear on the mainstream media. That is the reason for the attack, you know, the intensifying attacks on the trans community. And, you know, all of these attacks we're seeing on our democratic rights, it's, you know, another part of it is dividing us. Because if we are divided fighting each other, we are not going to come together to fight the real enemy, which is the ruling class, which is, you know, moneyed interests, you know, the private interests who are neoliberal.
That was Florida community activist and teacher Carla Correa in conversation with Ruth Beltran, host of The Ruthless Truth on Pacifica's WSLR in Sarasota, Florida. And that concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the CRD Collective. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD and on Facebook at COVID, Race, and Democracy. I've been your host, Polina Vasiliev. Thanks for listening.